Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and welcome to the show. 312-981-7200. That's our phone number. Call us or text us.
You can do either.
It's up to you. We're not going to tell you what to do. It's your life.
So live it.
Yeah, live it to its fullest. How inspirational. Today's show started out on a very inspirational note. We were just kidding with Steve Cochran about Elton John retiring. Does that affect you in any way, shape, or form?
No.
Not at all?
It's in 3 years, right?
Yeah, in 3 years. He's going to do a big farewell tour this year, next year, and part of the year after.
Right.
And then he says he's going to lay low.
I love Elton John, though.
I do, too.
His music, but, yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
But, I mean, here's the thing, and I guess you announce it so people who are a huge fan, like Elton Jim, can go get tickets to see your next 100 shows right. in the next 3 years.
I mean, look, you're right. more likely to buy a ticket if you think it's his farewell concert.
That's true, but even knowing this, I'm still not going to go see Elton John.
Have you ever seen him? Because no. I haven't, and I would like to. I just haven't.
I've seen him a couple times.
Have you?
Yeah.
That's not a good show, I bet.
That was a great show. Remember he had that album where he was backed by Symphony.
Maybe
the late 80s, mid to late 80s. I saw him at Poplar Creek.
Yeah.
I miss Poplar Creek a lot. I loved that venue.
It was so muddy sometimes.
Oh,
well,
sure.
So was Alpine awesome. Valley. That
oh,
was
Alpine
worst.
Valley. That
I
was
say
worst
so was Elton John.
Oh. How much do you think tickets are going to be for this thing?
$100.
Oh, so that'll raise the price of the ticket, won't it?
Oh, yeah.
It has
to. It's going to be crazy amount.
It sounds like that's... I mean, that's just what... I played some sound of it yesterday. You know, and it had the feel that it was a ticket-selling event.
Right.
Right.
I mean, he's 70.
Right. At some point, you say to yourself, do I need to keep doing this?
Tell Mick Jagger that.
Well, he'll be 73 at the end of this three-year tour. I mean...
Yeah. That's getting up there.
I mean, you know, you keep going until you... I mean,
I
guess it's kind of grueling.
Rock till you drop, Wendy.
And I was sad to see that, you know, Tom Petty's issue was...
drug overdose.
Yeah. That just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that the family was so honest about it, drawing, you know, shedding some light on this opioid problem because he was taking painkillers
right.
for his hip that ended up being broken by the last gig he had.
I know.
I mean,
terrible.
It is terrible. And then I think of Prince and Michael Jackson, like these are accidental deaths from taking pain meds.
But we always assume, because even here in the studio, when somebody's name is announced, from the world of rock when they've died, we all go, I bet drugs had something to do with this.
Yeah, but I didn't with Tom Petty for some reason because I felt like he was older and wiser. I'm not saying he didn't do drugs. Yeah. I guess he was still smoking pretty heavily towards, you know, I think still currently smoking.
Uh-huh.
That's not good for you. But I didn't think drugs for Tom Petty for some reason. Massive heart attack. Well, he had an injured hip, and by the last show, a doctor had looked at him and said, no, it's definitely fractured. It's broken.
So that's kind of similar to what happened with Prince, right? He was hurting.
It was his hip, too, wasn't it?
I think it was his hip, I think.
Oh, my God. Why aren't rock and rollers doing hip replacement ads?
It's a good idea. Very solid idea.
And hips, quicker recovery than knees.
Right. Right, right, right. So in the last week, we have found out that both Elton John and Neil Diamond will no longer be touring.
And Neil Diamond, I feel so sorry for, and Parkinson's disease. It is going to be grueling, and
sure.
his body is not going to tolerate it as well as Elton John's. Elton seems to be in good shape. I guess he's just, you know, do you think he needs the money? Elton John?
No, I don't think he needs the money. I just saw him in a movie. Elton John. I'm trying
Reginald
to
remember. Reginald Dwight was in a movie?
Yeah. You know what he was in was the sequel to The Kingsman.
The Louie Louie Band?
No.
Okay, well, then it's time to retire.
Once you're in that, Steve, you say that it's time to hang it up?
In The Kingsman? Yeah.
He played himself. There's a subplot in The Kingsman where they've decided to kidnap Elton John. And even though he's Elton John, anytime they send henchmen in to rough him up, he gets the best of them. It's pretty funny, actually.
He seems like he'd be pretty funny.
Yeah.
And he's been an actor all these years.
He has. Has he? What else has he done?
Tommy, the Pinball Wizard.
Yeah, I guess so. But there was kind of a break between the two,
I guess.
Those two roles.
Right. Like, what, 40 years? 40 years.
In a career spanning 50 years.
Right. But he entered, you know, he was kind of an actor in my eyes all the time. You know, I have said this to Elton John.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is. It might still be at my mom's house. But I made a scrapbook of Elton John because I was a huge fan of his, but I was younger. And I loved his music. And Someone Saved My Life Tonight really spoke to me for some reason.
Yeah.
And I put together a little scrapbook with any time he was in the newspaper, because this was pre-internet.
Yeah.
You know, you had to go do your homework and your research to get pictures of him. If I can find it, I will give it to him.
I mean, I have EPs of his, imports of his. I love his music. But, you know, I don't want to say he devolved, because that's not the right way, but he's, you know, not doing the same music he used to do, which certainly understandable.
Yeah.
But he's kind of...
He became irrelevant to me, I gotta tell you.
I'm not gonna say
Elton John.
I would say he became more of a caricature or.
Oh, mate. Well.
I mean, did you see him sitting in his Spangles yesterday at his announcement with Anderson Cooper sitting beside him? It just was a sort of a.
There's a Liberace angle to him.
It's a little bit.
You know? I'll never forget when I was in grade school, he had a hit with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And then one of my friend's older sisters said, you know, that's not his. He got that from someone else. And we all got mad at her. We go, no, Elton John doesn't steal music from other performers. And she's like, yeah, the Beatles. And we go, well, he wouldn't steal a song from the Beatles. That doesn't happen. But as it turns out, he didn't steal it.
Well, no.
He got the rights to it.
I almost like his version better.
Do you? Yeah.
I don't know. I go back and forth. But I don't mean he's irrelevant. I mean, he's really had an impact on my life. But in the last few years, I haven't really thought of him or thought about going to see him.
But wouldn't you put him in that category, guys, that if you did go to see a show, let's say he does 35 or 40 songs, every one you go, wow, what a mountain of hits. He's put out so many gigantic hits.
And you would know every word to pretty much every song.
Yeah. Yeah. And is he one of those guys, like you could say this with all the giants, you always know their big hits, but normally, for me anyway, like some of his greatest songs are the songs that weren't huge hits. There's a song called Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word. I love that song.
That was popular.
Was it a big hit? Was it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, only you heard of it.
I thought he just wrote that for me.
You know, the one that I thought really was never appreciated was like a hidden track was Someone Saved My Life.
Oh, that's
yeah. That is one of my favorite songs. I'm glad that was the hidden track.
You guys ever hear a song called Benny and the Jets?
No, did he do that?
Yeah, it's one of his hits, Benny and the Jets.
What is the name of the song?
Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word.
Number one, 1975.
It was not number one. No, there's no way it was number one.
I think it probably was.
How about In Neon? Did you ever hear that one?
No.
That's a good song. That's kind of a country type song.
You know the one I've been listening to a lot lately is Mad Hatters.
From Elton John?
Yeah. And it is.
Mona Lisa's and Mona.
I love that song. And that is kind of one that wasn't a big hit.
That is obscure. I don't know that one at all.
The album, though, it was the title track.
Oh.
You too.
Steve, you've disappointed Wendy.
God.
Come stand by me in the disappointment corner.
I'm not saying they hid it somewhere. I'm just saying it wasn't a big hit.
I think he had a lot of hits.
Gigantic amount of hits. That's why it's taken him 3 years to retire, because if he starts singing them now, he won't be done in 3 years. All right, let's do this.
I liked Honky Cat.
Never heard of it.
That's what I did.
I really loved it. I have Honky Cat on an import. He plays with a duck call.
Oh, really?
It mimics it all. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. A quick break, and then more reminiscences about Elton John.
He has not died. He's retiring.
He's just
in three years.
There's no rush. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
This one was written for me. The Bitch is Back. I should play it every Monday.
Remind me, were there radio stations?
Wednesday.
Now.
Were there radio stations that either wouldn't play this or couldn't play this because of the salty language?
No.
No?
Everybody was allowed
to play it?
Yep.
Huh.
And by the way, the Sorry Never Seems to Be the Hardest Word.
That obscure Elton John song that only I ever heard.
It was the top 20. Went to number 6.
It did?
Yes.
Man. I didn't know that.
77? What was the year?
Yeah, I can't remember when it was. Sorry.
Well, then I am sorry. And it does seem to be the whatever word. What is it? Sorry seems to be the hardest word. Now I proved it.
Now, have you ever heard of someone called Kiki D, Bill?
Yes.
Okay.
Don't go breaking her heart.
Yes.
God, I loved Elton John.
I know that because they did it on an episode of One Day at a Time for their talent show. Remember that episode?
Yes, yes we do. Yeah.
It's very enjoyable.
Barbie was singing it.
Yes, she was. Did a knock-up version.
My heart.
Incredible version.
And Mary Vandeveld was covering some pretty exciting news on the South Side. Is there a resolution to this chase that was going on?
Sorry about that. Yeah, there was a high-speed chase earlier that started. Actually, it was on the south end of the Ryan. There was someone in a pickup truck. It was a Goodyear pickup truck, and they were saying a carjacking was involved in this as well. So this went on for like a half an hour, and it just ended peacefully at 92nd and May. The suspect surrendered, got out of the truck. Police nailed him, and that finally it ended peacefully. So good news on the south side. He was actually slowing down, and he wasn't driving recklessly. I hate to say that about an actual suspect, but it was a pretty good ending too.
It looks like the ending just kind of pulled over, right, Mary?
He just pulled over and surrendered.
And
but
up.
Think about it. It's not going to end well. You're either going to get in an accident or you're going to be caught. So you may as well just surrender.
Right.
And stay alive.
Yeah.
Exactly. It looks like that's what he did.
But more times than not, when you see these on television, they don't end this way.
Yeah.
They end horribly.
And forgive me for not knowing this, but I thought that you're not supposed to do a police chase. Weren't those outlawed or something?
They changed the rule. Yeah, a couple years ago, they said only under extreme circumstances do they want these to take place. And I don't know that there's been more or less of them since that ruling.
Well, yeah. I think the police, it's up to their discretion as to if you know, how the guy's driving.
Situation.
And as Mary pointed out, this guy wasn't driving. I mean,
but it could have changed at any moment.
It could have, sure.
Yeah, and they were following him, you know, fairly farther away and just letting him have his space, it looked like, and just waiting because he was slowing down and he seemed to know the area well. He had the same route. He was going on the frontage road along the Ryan, then he was on 95th, 92nd, and he just kept making the same thing. So he was eventually going to get stopped anyway because they would have, you know, cordoned off all the areas. So,
do you think they ever used their GPS systems, like, during one of these chases to find out what the best route is? I wonder if that ever...
Your fastest route?
Yes. During your carjacking.
There's a slight delay because of a carjacking.
Police activity on 95th. Avoid.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I bet it's all changed.
All right, well, good. I'm glad that ended. That makes me very nervous.
It ended all right.
It really does.
Don't be nervous.
Don't be Rocky. All right, do we want to take a call? Listen, I totally 100% appreciate Elton John and respect him, but I haven't thought about him in a while, so it's not really going to change my way of thinking.
What a glowing endorsement.
So you're not going to miss him?
Well, I'll listen to his music on the radio or wherever I hear it.
All right.
Well, Kevin, what do you have to say?
I just remember that in 1971, Elton John opened for the Beach Boys at Northern Illinois University.
Oh, rockin' the kale.
That's a pretty solid show.
I know. It goes down in history as the best opening acts, like Jimi Hendrix opening for the Monkees.
That is a great one. I wish I was at that show. Thank you, Kevin.
You know, the other thing that has not been said is he was one of the first openly gay performers that... It just didn't seem to make a difference, which is such a good thing. But at the time, him admitting to being gay was a major, major thing. I mean, now it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But back then when he announced it, I remember people going, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what's going to happen.
Nothing.
He did fine.
He did do fine. And he was openly haired up when he put his toupee or wig or whatever on.
Yeah.
And it looked really good.
Yeah.
So good for him. Is Bernie Taupin still alive?
I think he is.
Did you ever see that movie that it was a behind the scenes movie about Elton John? I can never remember the name of it. But it just showed him in a terrible light. I mean,
no. What was that all about? Was it a documentary?
It was a documentary. I think it was even made by his boyfriend at the time. Something in tiaras. Crowns and tiaras or something.
It just showed
him as this very particular, peculiar, difficult guy to work with, or live with.
Oh.
I could see that being that. I really could.
Yeah.
Well, he seems...
Was Tom Hardy in it?
Tom Hardy the actor?
It was a documentary.
Rocket Man?
It was a documentary.
A musical biopic, but Rocket Man, was that it?
Tantrums and Tiaras.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was a reality show with little girls.
1997.
TMC.
Close. Very close.
Oh.
No, Steve, that's the first I've ever heard of it. So you'd recommend it or you wouldn't recommend it?
It's very interesting. If you don't want your Elton bubble burst, maybe not.
Maybe.
But, yeah.
All right. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. All kinds of stuff on today's show. Stay where you are. Dean Richards will join us later on. We'll talk a little bit about the aftermath of the Oscar announcements. We'll talk about the flu. It's gotten a lot worse than we ever thought. So what can we do about it? That's coming up, and a whole lot of other things. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
It's Wendy Snyder and Steve. Thank you so much. I am interested in this next topic. Here's why. I am a hypochondriac and I love documentaries.
Right.
So I think I have something.
What a perfect marriage.
How about it? On the line with us right now is film director Michael Galinsky and Dr. John Stacks, who is a family physician and assistant clinical professor of family medicine at Northwestern University. And gentlemen, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having us.
All right. Absolutely. Now, I don't know much about All the Rage, which is a documentary that I'll be showing at the Gene Siskel Film Center of the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which is a great venue to go see something this Friday and Saturday. We'll tell you how to get tickets and how to attend that. But now, All the Rage is a documentary about the late Dr. John Sarno, an interesting doctor who believed in holistic healing? Explain this to us.
So Dr. Sarno was a physician in New York City who opened a physical medicine practice back in the 1960s and didn't have as much luck treating his patients as he would have liked. And I've met him, I've studied with him. He kind of thinks like a psychiatrist. And he just started paying attention to how his patients were thinking and feeling about the symptoms that they had. And he noticed that attitude and psychology played a lot bigger role in their healing than he ever would have imagined. And as time went on, he recognized that we're human beings. We express in our bodies what doesn't get expressed in other ways. And he started treating people's back pain from a psychological perspective and had way more success than he ever had treating it traditionally.
And this is Michael speaking?
This is Dr. Stacks.
Oh, okay, Dr. Stacks. Okay, because I wanted to say, Dr. Stacks, you actually kind of sort of followed in his footsteps a little bit, haven't you?
That is correct. I studied with him back in 2006, 2007, 2008, and brought that back with me to Chicago when I moved here in 2009. And so I see patients for consultations about this. I teach classes about it. I have patients who are doing well, give talks about their experience regularly. And so very similar to the practice that Dr. Sarno had.
So when Dr. Sarno comes up with this technique or this method, how does the rest of the medical field, the medical community, look upon him?
I'd say that my experience has been that the people in the medical community in Chicago, some understand, some don't. And so when I was at Northwestern, I had a handful of physicians who would refer their patients to me regularly, usually saying, I'm not totally sure what he does, but he has a lot of luck with some of my other patients, and you should go talk with him about it.
Now, Dr. Strix, we're speaking to you, and also film director Michael Galinsky on the line with us. We're talking about All the Rage, which we'll be showing at the Gene Siskel Film Center Friday night and Saturday night. So, Michael, why do you want to make this documentary? What spoke to you?
Well, thank you. A number of things. First, my father, who was also a psychologist, had first almost died of an ulcer, and then shortly afterwards had whiplash, in a fender bender that the whole family was in, but it just didn't make any sense. And a couple years later, after suffering immensely, someone handed him Dr. Sarno's book. And as a psychologist, he completely understood the mind-body perspective. And he got better. So he started sharing that book with other people. 10 years later, when my brother was in graduate school, he ended up in his office because he couldn't drive or type. His hands were so bad. And he was cured. And at that point, I read the book, which slowly led to making the documentary. But one thing I want to add to what Dr. Strack said is, Dr. Sarno really did not have much support in the medical community. It was very difficult for him to do what he did.
Did people think he was a quack, kind of? I hate to use that term, but they did.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Most of his colleagues did. But what he did, when he realized what he would have taught, like the bed rest and the physical therapy and the hot and the cold, he went to look at the data to support all of these things that he was taught to do, and he found that there really wasn't any. So that's when he started to talk to his patients to look at what else was going on. And then he also started to look at, say, his experience with MRIs. People would come up with an MRI for herniated disc, but it wouldn't really correlate with where the pain was. They would have pain in four different places, and it didn't make any sense. So he realized that diagnosis didn't make any sense. And now there's tons of data that shows that that's true as well. So he was a really interesting character where he really thought of himself not as alternative medicine.
So
he practiced medicine. Yeah.
Right. As time has gone on, his methods have become more understood and accepted, though, right?
I think that's definitely true, and I think that there's a growing knowledge in the medical profession that mind and body are connected. There are a lot of physicians, especially younger ones, who are training now, who understand that our mind and our body are connected. It's all part of the same thing. I think that physicians don't always know how to speak of this very eloquently with patients, and that's one of the things that I've learned how to do studying with Dr. Sarno and studying this topic over time, is to be able to explain it in a way that makes sense to people so that people don't think we're saying it's all in your head or it's imaginary, which it's clearly not.
Couldn't you also look at this globally? I know there are some parts of the world, the Middle East, for example, where they're firm believers that the mind and the body tie in, much more so than here in North America, anyway.
I think that's definitely true, and I think we've looked at other cultures which have so many ways of healing discomfort, whereas here in the United States, we tend to react by taking a pill first, and what we're finding clearly, and you guys were talking about it earlier, is that that's not a great long-term strategy for people.
Just a personal tribute, I guess, to the mind-body connection. On December 7th, I had my knee replaced, a total knee replacement. And going to physical therapy, it's like I was getting frustrated. You know, I had the bike, the stationary bike. The seat was up to the 10th spot. I could not, like, get my knee around to pedal a bike. And then one day, my knee went around. And it was like, oh, my God, I can pedal. So then each time I went, I lowered the seat. I think yesterday I went to therapy, and I'm on the third position as opposed to the 10th position. But it's weird because as soon as my knee could go around on the bicycle, all of a sudden my knee didn't hurt that much. And all of a sudden I felt like, wow, I'm healing. So it is kind of a mental connection to physical healing.
There's a huge connection with physical healing. And I see that all the time. And the research shows that the area of our brain that's responsible for fear and worry interacts with the pain pathways. And so the more scared we get, the more worried we are that we're not going to get better, the worse it gets. And so that's one of the things I teach people to do, is to calm down that fear response, and oftentimes the pain will get much less.
That's what they just said to me yesterday. They wanted me to walk backwards on the elliptical, and I said, it hurts. That was Monday. And then yesterday, he goes, try it again, because your body will not want to do what has hurt you in the past. That's your mind saying, it hurt. I'm going to stay away from that. And I tried it yesterday, and lo and behold, it didn't hurt. So you have to push past the mental end of things, too. It's just all of a sudden that made a connection with me. So I'm very into seeing All the Rage. Where's the best way to get tickets? And I know it's alltheragedoc.com. Is there a better place to go?
Yeah, I don't even think it's on our website. It's at the Gene Siskel Center, so their website, which is, I think, Siskel. I'll have to send you a link.
We'll find it. We'll take a quick break and come back. And I understand Bill and I were reading about some celebrities that were big fans of the late Dr. John Sarno. And we'll continue with film director Michael Galinsky and Dr. John Strax, who is an integrative family physician at Northwestern University. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. Wendy, and we're 720 WGN. We're talking about a documentary that is opening tonight, or excuse me, Friday and Saturday night at the Gene Siskel Film Center. It's called All the Rage, and on the line with us is the director, Michael Galinsky, and we also have Dr. John Strax, who is a family physician, assistant clinical professor of family medicine at Northwestern University. All right, so All the Rage, documentary about the late Dr. John Sarno, kind of an unconventional mind-body connection and mind-body healing that he had. It's a technique that some celebrities have been into. Why don't you name some names?
Yeah, well, in the movie are Howard Stern and Larry David and Jonathan Ames. It's interesting because a lot of comedians end up with this problem, which goes back to what Dr. Sarno discovered early as he started to look into it, is that a lot of his patients he would call perfectionists and people pleasers. So he realized that in some way they were repressing their own needs in order to please other people. So it would make sense that comedians get it, but it also makes sense that comedians then understand what's going on and can kind of heal themselves that way, whereas sports figures have a lot more difficulty. So people will talk about, you know, Derrick Rose's back problems as kind of having to carry his whole family on his back or the whole community on his back, or, you know, Tiger Woods. But rarely will they look at kind of an emotional problem or an emotional situation as being an answer, because they're taught so firmly not to think of it that way.
Let me also,
it's kind of interesting, and yeah.
I may point this out as a half-Jewish person, I'm looking at the roster of people, Sarah Silverman, yeah. Bernie Sanders, Howard Stern, Larry David, those are all Jewish people. Did anyone else notice that?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's funny, a number of physicians who have taken up Dr. Sanders' mantle are also Jewish as well.
How about that? How about that?
Where do the Catholics go? Where should I go?
Church.
They're marching in lockstep, because a lot of it has to do with feelings of guilt and some standard.
Yeah, I got that.
I have a question for you, Dr. Strax. You are a doctor, and are the methods that you're using exactly Dr. Sarno's methods, or have you tweaked them a little bit over the years?
I've tweaked them a little bit over the years, and actually, I actually left Northwestern University to set up my own practice about 6 months ago. So I could do more of this type of treatment for people, and it's really expanded in those 6 months. I talk with people like Dr. Sarno did, and Dr. Sarno would see people, he would talk with them for an hour, and then he'd give a two-hour lecture, which I do, and then I also have panel discussions where people who have done well over time speak about their experience, and lately we've been getting 15, 16, 70 people to attend those. I think I have found over time that the science points a little bit different direction than what Dr. Sarno thought it was, but he was working 30 years ago before a lot of this science was developed, and so I think I and a number of other physicians who do this kind of work have tried to keep up with the science as much as possible to try to figure out what's happening inside the body that leads to this connection between mind and body.
Are these methods more or less expensive than traditional methods, and are they covered by most major insurance carriers?
Great question,
Bill.
Thank
you.
I think they don't tend to be covered by major medical carriers yet. We are working on that. But I would say that when I opened my new practice, one of my patients volunteered to design a website for me, and she did it for free because she said she was spending $5,000 to $10,000 a year in treatment before she met me. After she learned about this, took my class, and the pain went away, she saved that money every year.
Wow.
And it's drstrax.com. Is that the correct website
correct.
That I'm on right now?
DRACKS.com.
Yeah. All right. And, all right, Michael, this question is for you. Are you using this type of medical treatment at this point, after either before or after making this documentary?
Before, after, and continuing to go kind of deeper into the methodology and going to speak about it. So the movie is largely very personal. And I think one of the things that people who have this problem tend to do is they get the pain, and then you're afraid of it, but you're also avoiding certain emotions. And sometimes that can get so intense that you end up on your floor for a week and a half at the time, unable to move. And I think what that points to sometimes is that the pain is absolutely 100,000% real. I mean, when you're stuck on the floor and you can't move, you're not pretending, you're not faking. But the process by which it happens is less of a physical injury than a mental process. At the same time, you'll have people like Tom Petty, who was clearly someone who took care of a lot of people. And on his tour, he had a fractured hip, right? And he pushed through the pain, which is very different than, say, when you had an injury and you were getting it fixed and you were learning about how the pain works. In that case, maybe he took on so much responsibility, he couldn't put that aside. And he pushed through the pain too much to the point that his hip actually broke. So it's kind of finding a balance between those two things. That's really difficult at times.
We were just talking about Tom Petty earlier, because that breaks my heart that he was doing that for us, the fans, pushing through it, and, you know, an accidental drug death. I mean, that's what it was ruled as. That breaks my heart.
Yeah. And it wasn't just, I mean, I think it was a combination of different drugs to treat the anxiety of it and the pain of it and all those different things. And sometimes our doctors don't speak to each other. One thing I wanted to piggyback on what Dr. Strax said a moment ago, because some people think of this as it's just a mind thing. I think Dr. Strax and Dr. Sarno examine their patients physically first to rule out any physical problem like a broken hip or a fracture to dismiss that pain in that way. It's not that at all. It's really looking at the whole system. So there's a physical aspect, what's going on physically, but also what's going on emotionally. And I think that's the biggest problem that our medical system has, is we all understand that that's going on, but as he said, that we don't really have the language to deal with it. Doctors don't know how to say it, and patients don't want to hear it.
Right.
I know this is a peculiar question, gentlemen, but I will ask it anyway. There are some people, Wendy and I have had hypnotists on the show, and they say that there are some people that are just immune to being hypnotized. Their mindset just isn't made up right where they could be hypnotized. Does the same apply for this? Are there some people that just because of the way their mind works, they're not eligible for this?
I wouldn't say they're not eligible necessarily, but I've definitely found that some people understand this concept more easily than others. And so when I see a new patient, if they come into my clinic and they're looking to solve a pain issue, oftentimes I'll throw out this possibility along with a number of others. And so I work in the integrative medicine world, and so I may say, you can talk about talking to a chiropractor or an acupuncturist, and there are some people who think that the mind and the body are connected, and that's why the pain develops. And some people really latch onto that and go forward with it very assertively and do very well. Other people say, oh, you know, I heard about that and I heard about that book, and my aunt, that's for her. For me, I need to do something different. And so I don't try to force anybody in this direction. I give it as an option. People know me, that I provide this type of treatment. But people have to be ready to understand that this is a different way of treating pain before they can move forward in that direction.
And they have to be open to it, too. If you have a closed mind, you're not going to benefit.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, Michael, I have to ask you, all the rage in the bank, you're done with this one. You're probably, hopefully, moving on to another documentary. What is that one about?
Well, there are several. Actually, one is about a woman who grew up in the Witness Protection Program. That one's going to be very interesting. And then there's another one that was almost combined with this, which was about nature versus nurture and donor conception. And we've been shooting on that for about 12 years. So we're starting to edit that. And that's pretty exciting.
Boy, those all sound pretty fascinating. We will look for you more, Michael Galinsky. Go see All the Rage. It'll be showing at the Gene Siskel Film Center on Friday night and Saturday night. You can go to the Gene Siskel Film Center website and get more information on that. And Dr. John Strax, you can go to drstrax.com. Very quickly before we let you go, if there's someone listening right now, what kind of conditions would this type of medicine treat? Perhaps they're listening and they haven't been able to find any relief. What kind of, like, thyroid issues, fibromyalgia, what would you be suffering from that you would benefit from this type of medicine?
So a lot of people know Dr. Sarno for the back pain, but what we found over time is that it's back pain, neck pain, stomach issues sometimes. I have a number of patients with migraine headaches. We've done some research on fibromyalgia. I have patients with chronic fatigue. And so chronic issues that aren't getting better in other ways, those are the kinds of things that respond very well to this type of treatment, and oftentimes much better than medication or surgery.
Good luck to both of you, and great to meet you. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again.
Thanks so much
for having us.
Take care, guys. Absolutely. A quick...
The flu is going around, and it's trying to get you down. It wants to leave you weak and sick in bed. Coughing your lungs out with an aching head. But you can fight it.
Hey, don't get the flu. I'm not going to get the flu. You know why, Bill? I'm not going to get the flu.
You got immunized.
I got my flu shot.
Right.
We have Dr. Marielle Frachone on the line with us, and I hate to do back-to-back medical things. We were talking about a documentary that's going to be at the Siskel Center. And
All
the Rage. But here's why I want to talk about the flu shots. And first of all, Dr. Frachone, thanks for coming back to talk to us. Thanks for my flu shot. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I think this is very important because there was a school, the Math and Science Institute or something, that was closed down. There are a lot of people. I am seeing reports of lots of people getting the flu, more than I've ever seen before. What is going on?
It's a bad flu season this year, that's for sure. And the interesting thing this year is that across the country, it's the worst season in terms of influenza-like activity since 2003. But that's not exactly the case for Chicago. So for Chicago, this season is most like the 2014 season from the data we have so far.
This is the obvious question, but it needs to be asked. Why? What's going on? Why is it so awful this year?
So we never know exactly why, but in terms of the timing of when the cases started increasing, mm-hmm. it's probably the fact that a lot of people were around each other in December, and that encouraged the flu to spread more quickly, and that's why it reached a peak so quickly in every state across the continental U.S.
All right, maybe I'm a bad mother, maybe I'm not. I got my flu shot because Dr. Marielle Frachon gave it to me, and it was easy. But you can go to Walgreens, you can go to the Jewel, you can go to your doctor, you can go anywhere. I did not get my kids a flu shot yet, and I keep meaning to.
Joan Crawford.
I know, and one of them now was just at the doctor. He's homesick from school because he has a sinus infection, and one of his teachers said, that's how my flu started. So is it too late to get a flu shot?
It's not too late, and we recommend that everyone still goes out and tries to find a location to get it. You know, we just put out a press release that we're going to have additional flu vaccine available at 4 Walgreens across the city, and that's for people who are unable to pay or for people who are uninsured. But again, call your doctor. There's plenty of flu vaccine available. So call your doctor, get in, get the flu shot. You know, in 2014, there was a second peak in the season, and that was of a different strain of flu than the one that's circulating now. But it's in the flu shot. So if you get a flu shot now, you'll be protected against the one that's circulating now. And then if an additional one circulates, you'll be protected for then.
Take your kids to Walgreens, Wendy, at the corner of Bad and Mother.
You're a jerk.
There's no guilt here.
All right, but I'm just saying better late than never. Now, I have to bring this up because there are a lot of people who say, you know, oh, you don't get a flu shot. That's terrible. Don't get vaccinations. I don't agree with those people at all. But I do hear people say, oh, the flu shot is only 30 or 40% effective this year. Explain that, but it still helps. You're not 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So it may not prevent you from catching the flu, which is something we've learned over the past few years, but we have really good data to show that it decreases the number of days you have symptoms. It decreases how contagious you are. So especially if you know babies or pregnant women or anyone over the age of 65, you'll be helping people around you by getting the flu shot.
And Dr. Frachon, we talked about this when you were in studio with us. They're kind of guessing when they come up with, the serum, they're kind of guessing, and then it mutates over time, doesn't it?
It can. Yep. And that's what happened in Australia. They had a really bad flu season and it mutated from the strain that was in their vaccine. We haven't seen that happen so far for the vaccine for the Northern Hemisphere, the one that we've been giving, but they're going to have data on exactly how effective it is later in February. So we'll know. But we think that it's probably about the same as last year.
Really? Okay.
Dr. Frachon is medical director for the Chicago Department of Public Health Immunization Program. For anyone listening right now who is saying, oh, I don't get a flu shot, I don't need a flu shot, what would you say to them?
I would say that if you could take a pill to keep you out of the hospital, would you do it? And if you get your one flu shot, then hopefully that will keep you out of the hospital and keep your loved ones safe as well.
So Bill he has an aversion to needles.
Yeah.
If it was a pill that you could take, would
yeah,
you do
I would
it?
Take it if
so
it was
you're
a
not
pill.
Against the vaccination,
no,
you're
not
against
at all.
Needles.
I just don't like the needles.
Is there any other way?
I'm still going to work on you, Bill.
All right, that's fine.
You know that, right?
I know, I'm right with that. That's okay.
I think maybe next time I'll just surprise you.
Hey, what's that?
How are you?
All right.
Are they? I know that they did have the nasal spray for people under, what, 10?
Yeah, and I dressed like a baby, and I went to a clinic, and they figured me out.
And I do know that it wasn't as effective as as the actual needle. Is there any way to come up with something in a pill form or for somebody who's scared of needles?
They're working on better ways to administer the flu vaccine, and they're working on making a flu vaccine that is effective against every type of flu. So within the next few years, I hope that there will be more options available. But in the meantime, I'm going to try to stick Bill.
There should be. That's not nice.
I like that.
That's not nice. There should be a spray on like they do with sunscreen. They should have something like that.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Yep.
Yeah. Or
yep.
A candy.
Candy.
Oh, that is genius.
I would love that.
Come
All right.
on, if you can put acid in a Jolly Rancher or pot, why can't you put a flu vaccination in there? Come on. All right, it is not too late. I'm worried about that second wave. So what do I tell a 15-year-old who says it's my body, I can do what I want? And I said, no, you're going to listen to your mom and get a flu shot. What do I tell him?
Well, you should tell tell him that his decisions affect other people, including you. And so since he's out at school all day and contacting probably a lot of other sick kids, he should think about getting it to protect everyone around him.
And I know we've been joking around a little bit about this, but this is people have died from this flu, right?
But not just, these are just people with compromised immune systems. Has a healthy, like, middle-aged person died from the flu at this point? Yes, Bill?
Yeah. There were a couple stories about people who didn't seem to fit the mold of those most susceptible, and it has not been good.
Yeah, so across the country, there have been an increased number of deaths from the flu than we would expect, including deaths in children, which is always upsetting. In the city of Chicago, we haven't had any deaths related to flu in children yet, but every year we do have a few, unfortunately. And in terms of the most severe cases of flu in Chicago, so those who have to be admitted to the intensive care unit, there have been 12 deaths.
Which is just slightly above the average, right?
It's a very serious issue. We're not seeing as bad a flu season as California is seeing, but again, one death is too many, in my opinion.
Boy, poor California. The fires, the flu, what was the other big thing?
The parents who tied their kids to the beds. It's been a bad year.
The mudslides is what I meant.
That's also bad.
See, that makes me look like a better mother.
Sure it does.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on. And the reason we did really is, people, it's not too late. Go ahead. There is not a shortage of the flu vaccination.
Right.
It's out there. Dr. Marielle Frashone, Medical Director of the Chicago Department of Public Health Immunization Program. I got to get my kids this weekend to go get their flu shots.
Yes.
And all our info is on cityofchicago.org/health.
Thanks, Dr. Frashone. I'm keeping my eyes on you.
All right.
All right. That's fair.
Watch out.
Right. Yeah, really look behind you a lot.
At all times.
Thank you, doctor.
I have to keep spinning around when she's in the studio now. It's dangerous.
Well, she cares about you, though.
I know she does, but that's not a good way to care.
All right, quick break. It's Bill Lepp. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. All right, Bill. Some words of wisdom for you.
It's about time.
If music be the food of love,
yes,
play on.
So true. So true.
It is not in the stars to hold our destiny, but in ourselves.
Also true.
We know what we are, but know not what we may be.
That might also be true. I don't know what that means, but I would say that could be true.
Love all, trust a few, do wrong to none.
Love the one you're with.
Stills. The other ones are William Shakespeare.
Oh, Bill Shakespeare wrote those.
Shakespeare.
That guy was good.
Hell is empty and all the devils are here.
Oh.
I believe that.
That's interesting. All right.
You know, I looked up the top 10 William Shakespeare quotes, and I don't know a one of them.
Well, to be or not to be is the obvious
That's
one.
That's the only
That's
one
on
I know.
There.
And you have to say it while wearing tights.
I am. I'm covered. Why would
Thank
that
God
one
you're
be
covered?
Why wouldn't that be on there?
I don't know.
That's the first one you think of when you think of William Shakespeare.
Not on the top 10. The course of true love never did run smooth. And shouldn't it be smoothly?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm the only one who can proofread a Shakespeare quote.
They spoke very differently there at Stratford-on-Avon.
Wow. I was just thinking, there was something Stratford, some correlation that it just brought me back to my childhood. We were in Canada or something,
yeah.
And my mom took me to a Shakespeare in the park kind of thing.
In Canada? Was it a polite version of Shakespeare? Because everything in Canada is just a little more polite than it is here.
I don't remember where we were, but I went to a Shakespeare in the park.
I don't want to bother you, but to be or not to be, would it go like that? Is that how they changed it?
Yeah. It was really good, though. But we have a pair of tickets to Short Shakespeare. It's a Midsummer Night's Dream. It's playing on Saturdays, February 3rd through March 10th, and it's playing at The Yard at Chicago Shakespeare on Navy Pier. You can experience the romance, magic, and hilarity of the Bard's beloved comedy. Or do you say beloved?
I think either one would do.
I kind of go back and forth.
Yeah.
It's Short Shakespeare, so it all happens in just 70 minutes. You can get tickets at chicagoshakes.com, chicagoshakes.com, or we have a pair to give away right now.
Let's give it away. How do you want to do it?
Caller number 2B or not to be.
Oh, very nice.
At 312-981-7200. It used to be on top of the screen, and it's not there anymore.
312-981-7200. Be caller number two, because it's to be or not to be, and you will get to see short Shakespeare. 70 minutes, you say?
Yes. When a father gives to his son, both laugh. When a son gives to his father, both cry.
Oh.
That's beautiful.
That one hit home.
I thought that was from Harry Chapin. The Cats in the Cradle?
No. That's similar to Cats in the Cradle.
How about this one? There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so.
Some of these
are too deep for me.
He was like the Stephen Wright of his day, William Shakespeare.
It is not in the stars to hold our destiny, but in ourselves.
Yeah.
I have a couple more.
That one's true, too.
I like that one.
Yeah.
A fool thinks himself to be wise, but a wise man knows himself to be a fool.
Mmm. The old spinneroo.
Yeah, I like how he did that. And finally, no legacy is so rich as honesty. Boy, he really wants us to be better people, doesn't he?
We will serve no wine before it's time.
That is Orson Welles.
Oh, right. I couldn't remember if it was Orson Welles or William Shakespeare.
What was the wine?
Ernest and Julio Gallo.
Oh, yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Jazzy, do we have caller number two? Just waiting for a name here. Kim from Mundelein.
I knew she would win. Congratulations, Kim from Mundelein. You're going to see Short Shakespeare.
Short Shakespeare, Midsummer Night's Dream. It begins February 3rd on Saturdays, February 3rd through March 10th. It's at the Yard at Chicago Shakespeare on Navy Pier. As I mentioned before, experience the romance, magic, and hilarity of the Bard's beloved comedy in just 70 minutes. You can get your tickets at chicagoshakes.com, or you can be like Kim from Mundelein and listen to the station, and maybe you'll win something.
You'll win something nice. Wendy, an honor has been bestowed upon Oprah Winfrey.
Bestowed.
Yep. On Oprah Winfrey. What did I say?
Bestowed.
You know why I said it that way? Because that's how Shakespeare would have said it.
No stone left unturned.
That's right. An honor is coming to Oprah Winfrey that she's never had before. Very, very rare.
Hmm.
Now, Oprah's had some incredible honors thrown her way in the past, but this one...
She's getting knighted.
She's not getting knighted.
She's getting queened.
No. Nope.
Throned.
I don't think you can do that unless you're a citizen of the UK.
Oh, that's true.
I don't think they would allow that. So Oprah is about to have something happen to her. A huge honor, giant honor. Doesn't happen to a lot of people. What could it be? And then I have a clue for you that may help. If you want to take a guess first, or you want to just hear the clue.
I've been guessing, and I've been guessing.
You have not been correct yet.
She's going to be on a statue.
Mm, you're close.
The Chicago Mount Rushmore.
No, there is no Chicago Mount Rushmore.
I thought we were getting women. Isn't there some statue they were going to put, and Oprah's one of them?
It's the first I'm hearing of it. It's a good idea.
I would be on it.
I would like to see that statue, and you should be on it. You and Oprah and Jory Luloff. And who else?
Carol Marine.
Carol Marine should also be on there. I think they should put that statue up today.
Oh, my God. All right, you have to give me a clue, because I really have no idea. She's getting a dog.
She's not getting... No, she has a dog. She has a talking dog.
That's not nice.
That's
about
pretty
Stephen.
Cool. Oh, sorry, Stephen. All right. In addition to Oprah having this honor thrown upon her, Reese Witherspoon is also, and so is Mindy Kaling.
Having a baby.
No, they're not. No. No.
Oprah would make a good mom.
She'd make a great mom, but...
A godmother.
I
have no idea.
You give up? You want to flip over all the cards?
Yeah.
Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, and Mindy Kaling are all having Barbie dolls created in their likeness. You can get an Oprah Winfrey Barbie doll.
I have goosebumps.
Isn't that excellent?
I know you want to be on an action figure. That's your goal in life.
I do want that.
I would not mind being a Barbie.
Yeah. Now, the reason behind this is the three of them, Oprah, Reese and Mindy, Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, are all in a movie together called A Wrinkle in Time. So they're creating a series of dolls. Barbie is creating a series of dolls to honor the characters they play in the movie. But in the old days, you couldn't get an Oprah Winfrey Barbie doll. That's going to change in the next couple of months.
I might have to get one.
They show pictures of it. I'll show you the pictures. Now, sadly, for me anyway, they're wearing the costumes that they wear in this movie, A Wrinkle in Time. I think if you're doing an Oprah doll... You make her dress like Oprah.
Which is very stylish.
Very stylish.
Yeah, I don't like stylish. That.
Well, you could buy other clothes, though, right?
You can
buy all that stuff.
You can. And I think you let the Oprah doll talk, but you have a Stedman doll that can't talk. I think you just have him in the box.
And is there a Gale doll, like a skipper?
Yeah, I was just thinking she should be the skipper, and Stedman can be the smooth Kendall.
Wow.
I'm sorry, wow. Stedman. I have nothing against him. It's just it's an easy one.
Who's going to be Francis or Francie? Didn't you guys have a Francie? You didn't have a Francie?
Francie was like a competitor to Barbie,
yes,
right?
Yes, but no, well, she was a Barbie doll, but she
was
younger.
Oh, she also made by Mattel?
She was like Francine. A cousin. No, I,
no,
think,
I think Francie.
It was Francie. Yeah, she was real pretty.
Yeah.
I did not have Francie a Francie. Doll.
Your mom didn't love you.
Oh, I know.
Mary's
I didn't
mom
go to Bozo.
Her.
I had a Tootie, too. Did you have a Tootie?
No.
Is that something you want
to
talk about on the air,
Nick DiGilio, grab that one from Mary Vandeville.
No,
she's not featured very often.
T-U-T-T-I, Tootie. Oh, my gosh. I'm looking her up. Right. I had her. She was a little one.
Wait, Tootie was on the Cosby Show, right?
No, that was Rudy.
Facts of Life.
Oh, Rudy.
Rudy Tootie.
Right.
Fresh and Fruity.
Rudy. You guys don't believe me.
They work together.
I'm looking her up.
The Tootie doll came with a bunch of beans, like a little sack.
Stop
of
it. Did the Oprah doll come with a car? Tootie and Todd. There were
you
two
get a
of
car
them.
And you get a car?
Tootie and Todd Tootie and were Todd, Barbie's maybe. Younger twin siblings. They debuted in 1966.
Who was the parent?
I had one. I
think
had
that's
both
right.
of them.
That
Tootie
is right.
and Todd, yes.
Where did they go, though? Why don't we hear about them anymore?
At orphanage.
I don't know. They were... they got sent to Europe or something.
Oh, no.
I don't know, but you look them up. Tootie and Todd
I remember.
So,
so that
they were bendable dolls. They were real rubbery, and they were bendable.
Mid or late 60s, maybe, Mary?
Yeah, like 66
right?
they
yeah.
debuted.
Yeah.
I liked my Malibu skipper. She was the hottest of them all. She's such a tan and that white blonde hair.
Looking good.
Really good.
Looking very good. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news for you next, and then Dean Richards joins us. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys, Dean.
Is Dean on the phone today?
Dean is. Try the direct line and see if you get Dean.
There he is.
Dean, are you there?
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with the regular hookup.
Uh-oh.
I'm blaming Cochrane. So.
Yeah, but...
We got a hookup. I've always wanted a hookup. I've never had one.
It worked this morning. I don't know what's happened.
That's all good
he
now.
He poured Mountain Dew on the buttons. You don't think that had anything to do with it, do you?
You know, they're letting the equipment, just break down since we're moving.
No one cares anymore.
You know, the Showcase Studio is going to be a mattress store.
That's all right. That's fine.
I like being on my back.
Hey, Dean, last week at this time, you told us about our friend Alalalala from the morning news. She had this episode where she was telling about her love for Ricky Martin, and he was listening to this live on television. And Wendy says that this has made national news headlines. Was it on The Talk the other day, Wendy?
Yeah, that's what I read.
Yeah?
I've seen it on a couple of national news headlines.
Wow.
There's no talking to Annabelle Laval now as a result of this.
Her head is so big.
Like a pinata.
We're no longer allowed to.
I want to see an Annabelle Laval pinata.
Me too.
Really, you want to go down this path?
Yeah. I love her. She was so adorable with him. Honestly, you told us about it, and I went and found it and watched it.
It's great.
She is just genuinely adorable.
She is.
Yeah. Yep. No question about it.
And she made the national news.
She's all over the place.
Yeah, she was all over the place.
Dean.
If I would have known that, I would have gone crazy.
I know. I can hear a little jealousy in Dean's voice. Yeah, he doesn't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, number one, I know that it's sincere because the day before the interview, she actually threatened my life and said that she was going to kill me.
She said that?
If we didn't let her into the interview somehow. Because, she's around town.
Right.
So, she said, that she's been a fan for life. They both grew up on the island.
Yeah.
And she's, there's a special ethnic pride that she has. I think she may be a little hot for him.
Yes.
Oh, why not?
Never mind the ethnic pride. Let's call it what it really is.
He is raging hormones. Hot.
But she is, she was, he couldn't have been nicer, number one.
Yeah.
And when Anna came on, he just couldn't have been a better sport. And he was sitting there. Anna thought that he was gone. off because it was a satellite interview, and that he had gone on to the next interview, but he was still hooked up with us, and he could hear her, and he was very amused by
the
whole thing.
How about
really
that?
Adorable.
So I know what I'm doing the next time I talk to Tommy Lee Jones.
Gosh. You got to gush a little bit. Dean, there's a trend on television now. If something was popular years ago, like Will and Grace or Roseanne, you bring it back.
Or X-Files.
Or X-Files. Yeah. Or the Gilmore Girls.
Or Gilmore Girls.
So now, Murphy Brown? Yeah. Are they doing it? Yeah,
they're bringing back Murphy Brown. CBS confirmed yesterday that they've confirmed 13 weeks. Candace Bergen is going to be back. She's 71 years old.
Wow. Good.
And in what context now? I've read a couple of outlines that are speculated that she now works for a cable news channel. You know, she's on that old show, you know, she sort of was Barbara Walters,
right,
or Diane Sawyer.
Yeah.
Now she's going to be, it sounds like she's going to be on one of the 24-hour news channels. And don't know if she's going to be working with the same crew, if all the same, you know, if any of the regular cast members are going to be back again. But they just thought it was a good time. You know, that show was so political.
Sure.
And so topical. They thought that this would be a good time to bring back something like this.
Will Frank Fontana play Frank Fontana?
I hope so. I liked it.
WGN's own Frank Fontana play Frank Fontana?
I don't know. I think that would be great.
Maybe.
He works in the newsroom and redecorates it at the same time.
Will they have, Dean, remember that real happy theme song they had? I don't know if you remember. Here, let's play a little of that theme song. Hold on.
B-B-5-5-4-4-4. I smell smoke in the auditorium.
Murphy. Murphy.
So they got to bring that back, right? People love that.
I have only vague memories of the show, apparently.
You are so weird, Bill.
I love that show.
I love you.
I don't know why. When I think of that show, all I can think of is you make me feel like a natural woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that when Murphy Brown had the baby, and sang that, it was actually a really touching and poignant moment where she's saying, "You make me feel like a natural woman," holding her newborn.
Was the baby's name Avery?
I think so.
Does that sound right?
I think I only watched it a handful of times, but I'm so remembering good. All this stuff you're saying.
Yeah,
I used to watch it pretty often, and it's on. I think it's on Antenna TV every night, so I've caught it a couple of times. Doesn't exactly hold up.
No.
Everything was so topical.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of it seems very dated, and the clothes and the hair and everything is very dated. But it was very cutting edge. And
remember the fight she got into with Dan Quayle because she was a single mother on the show, and he thought that was bad for family values?
Right, exactly. It was a big focal point of the 1992 presidential race.
Yep.
I hope he's on the show because, you know, the guy that played Eldon, the painter?
Yes.
Who was
Robert Pastorelli.
Never done painting her house?
Yes.
He passed away, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Did he commit suicide? Am I remembering that correctly?
I can't remember. It may have been that.
Anyway, he's passed away.
Yeah.
So how funny would it be if Dan Quayle now
he's the house painter.
Painting that house?
That would be great.
That's hysterical. I hope so. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then Dean will share with us which movies are coming out this weekend, and maybe a little Oscar talk.
Not a lot to choose from.
Not a lot coming out this week.
I'm going to say 80% Oscar talk.
Yeah.
20%.
And then new movies.
Let's
do that.
Either they suck or they're boring.
Overdose. It was a morphine overdose. Said Robert Pastorelli.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
In 2004.
Right. No. That's terrible. That's awful. All right, a quick break, then more with Dean. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, along with Dean Richards. We talk movies with Dean every Thursday. Dean, James Franco did not get a nomination for Best Actor for The Disaster Artist, and some are speculating that it's because of this scandal that he is involved in. What do you think?
I think there's no question that that's the reason that he did not get a nomination. The accusations of sexual assault against him came out like the last 2 weeks of Oscar voting, when a lot of the Oscar voters wait to vote because they're allegedly watching movies and, you know, catching up on the film so they can make informed judgments, you know, do the best job that they can. James Franco had been nominated for every other award show leading up to this until the accusations came out. He won the Golden Globe. He won Critics' Choice. didn't even get a nomination this time. Instead, I mean, there are fewer nominations because many of the previous award ceremonies break up dramatic and comedy actors, so he had a better chance of being nominated. And with the Academy Awards, there were only five nominees for Best Actor. And those went to Timothy Chalamet from Call Me By Your Name and Daniel Day-Lewis for allegedly his last movie, Phantom Thread, Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out. Denzel Washington was the big surprise here with Roman J. Israel Esquire. And the person who is going to win this category is Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour.
But you know why that's interesting, Dean, is Gary Oldman himself had an issue years ago of domestic abuse with his wife, where he was allegedly hitting his wife with a telephone repeatedly. But now some people are saying that certain actors are almost grandfathered in, that happened years ago, so let it go. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess that must be the case, or else, you know, people feel it was, you know, an issue between a husband and a wife, which doesn't make it right in any way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't somebody who was using their position or their celebrity to try to get sexual favor with somebody or drug them and take it in many cases. So I don't know, you know, I don't know what someone's rationale would be of why you look one way for one and one way for the other. You know, we've talked about this before, the whole Woody Allen, Roman Polanski example. So people knew very well about the histories of both of those guys and very willingly continued to work for them and perform for them. So, you know, some people just turn their heads and some people, you know, don't.
But it's tearing Hollywood apart in that certain actors keep accusing other actors and directors and producers of knowing certain things, not disclosing certain things. You're getting on an almost daily basis people accusing each other of inside information that they're not sharing. You're saying that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The latest, David Copperfield, was accused of drugging a 17-year-old back in the 80s. And you know, the allegations have come out against him today, and he said, you know, before you make a judgment, wait, you haven't heard all the information.
Yeah.
Because all of this is coming out on a daily basis, I do think that it wouldn't be a bad idea to wait and get proof on many of these things. For someone just to come out and go on a website somewhere and accuse somebody can be life-changing for somebody, can be career-ending for somebody. Well, they may very well be guilty, but I'm a big believer in you know, the presumption of innocence until you prove somebody guilty.
Right, right. But now I'm trying to think of the actress Alison Brie. I don't know if you're aware of her. She is connected to James Franco's brother. She's married to James Franco's brother.
Right. Yep.
So she kind of defended him a little bit. People are down on her. Scarlett Johansson has been in and out of trouble for who she's defending and not defending. It's really interesting to see who's taking whose side.
Yeah, it's the whole you know, sort of the whole way that this sexual allegation, accusation phenomena has taken place is great because people aren't afraid to speak up anymore. But my fear is that we're going to just sort of become numb to it, not pay attention to it anymore, when we should be paying attention to serious cases and serious accusations. Nobody even is paying attention. I don't think this. I had the David Copperfield story on the TV morning news this morning, but I barely saw the story reported any place today.
I didn't know it till you just said it.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah,
it's come to that, where we just say, well, throw another one on the fire. They just keep coming that fast and
furious.
Nobody's
even paying attention anymore.
I know.
And he made the Statue of Liberty disappear.
Yeah, think about that. Think about that for a second.
Couldn't make these allegations disappear, but he made the statue.
He's not that good.
I guess he's not.
Right.
All right, as you pointed out, there's a couple movies that have come out this weekend, but nothing really exciting. No. Another Maze Runner movie, right?
No,
the Death Cure?
Yeah, we're back in, you know, we're sort of typical January, February mode now with this new Maze Runner movie, which really is not very good at all. It is called Maze Runner, The Death Cure. Now, I thought this was about the making of corn flour.
You call it corn. We call it Maze Runner.
Right. In my country, we call it maize. It's the third movie in this franchise, like, and just so typical of a third movie in a franchise. This one really is so empty. It's nothing but car chases and explosions. There's a train load of uninfected prisoners who get freed by a bunch of free uninfected survivors in this saga, and it's a good guy bad guy battle. There's nothing to the story at all, and I couldn't have been more bored watching this whole thing. It's not my kind of movie, but I just think it's just so boring. C minus for this one.
C minus for Maze Runner, The Death Cure.
And another movie that's out this week is, it's an okay movie in some ways, called In the Fade. It's a German language film, so you do have to read the titles on it. You don't like reading?
No.
You don't like reading movies?
No, I like to view them.
Diane Kruger is in this one. She plays a woman living in Germany whose Turkish-born husband and child are killed in a terrorist bombing. And this movie is about the investigation of who committed the bombing. This movie is about the trial of a couple of people who are accused of doing it, and the massive amount of red tape in the court system to try to prosecute who they think may have done this, and that slowly builds to a revenge subplot in this movie. It is it's a very slow-paced film. It's not a terribly pointed film in its point. It's a little bit scattered and all over the place. The performances are quite good. Diane Kruger is
always good.
She's quite good in this movie, but it just takes forever to kind of the story to kind of come together. So I gave it a Dean's List C.
Dean's List C for In the Fade, and then Maze Runner, The Death Cure, C minus. You said, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. All right,
that
Dean.
Is correct.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you. Have a good weekend.
You guys too. Thank you.
That's our friend Dean Richards, bye-bye. Everybody. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch, or you can follow us on the stream. We'd love to have you there. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.